Welcome to The Rodcast with Rod Turner, the show all about real estate. We discuss everything that affects asset-backed businesses, investments, and go deep into the details with some of the best in the business.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Rodcast. Today is the 5th of April. It's the last day to maximize your ISA. Unfortunately, by the time this actually gets out, it's probably going to be after the 5th of April. But I am joined again by Manish Kataria and Adam Lawrence for our investment mastermind, where we each pick a investment class, whether it's an ETF, a share or stock, a bond, something that any retail investor can pick and buy through their ISA. And we look at how it's going to perform and forecast really what's going to happen. It's a bit of fun. It is absolutely not investment advice, but it's always good to follow and have a laugh maybe at our expense when things go wrong. So welcome, Manish. Welcome, Adam. How are you both?
Very good, thank you. How are you guys?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having us again, Rod.
I thought I'd start by saying a couple of things about some of the previous picks that we've done. So the winners and the losers from my point of view. Certainly, I'll start with the good news, which is back, God, I'm not sure of the exact date, but I've got the gains here, was Facebook or Meta that we invested in. And that's actually now gone up by 200% since that point, which is fantastic. So that's definitely a winner there. However, one of the losers, which started off being a great winner, it went up by about 60%. Fortunately, now it's down by 67%. So a really big old hit there. And that is Agilon Health, which was a healthcare product over in the States. So that one really has taken a hit. Another one that's done well is Google, up 49% since the pick. Barclays up 32%. We also had a REIT, a supermarket REIT, that's actually down by 11% since we picked it. Although I'm still putting money into that one. I quite like that one, to be fair. Agilon Health down at 67%. You might think, oh, I'm not sure I want to put any more money into it, but it probably is showing up as a buy now. Not sure that's going to help. Any thoughts on any of the picks we've done in the past? And I think that kind of highlights some of them is about timing. And we discussed, I think, on the last episode with some of our picks, how long we would expect to be in them for. Not all of our picks are for the long term. And some of them are more like kind of 6 month, maybe 12 months. Any thoughts on that, guys?
I think Meta stands out, doesn't it? I mean, it was a great pick by yourself, Rod. And I remember at the time it was a tech stock out of favor, showing value, which was a rarity to show, you know, to have tech stocks which were showing value. I think it was something like 12, 13 times PE at the time, which was a great bargain. So I think that one's a real standout.
Only I got a bit more.
I think on the flip side, probably it just shows what individual stocks can do, doesn't it? Because you've got the good and the bad there, haven't you? Really, really significant. And this is why you have a portfolio of diversified investments, right? This is a perfect lesson in itself, Rod. It's almost a fix, really. It's so
and,
good. So
and the good. Other thing to remember is when something goes down by 67%, you might think, oh, what's it got to go up by? And that's not by 67% to break even. So whereas
200%, yeah, 200% to get back to break even, yeah.
The way you've got Meta sounding a lot better than the loss that you've made on the other side, actually, it cancels it out as long as both investment amounts are the same. So, yeah, it's important to remember that as well. So, it's 5th of April. We are in a new, getting up to a new tax year. I imagine, I know I have, I'm sure Manish has, probably Adam as well, that's maxed out their ISA either yesterday or today to get it in the last bit. So put money in there. I've not necessarily put it out and invested it all yet. I'm kind of waiting on the sidelines for this chat, really. And I'm interested into what our picks are going to be. Certain things that are on the horizon is a potential new government coming in at some point. There's various kind of things have gone on with our last budget. There's a bit of chat about the UK stock market and some maybe some carrots thrown in there by the government to encourage investment into the UK. Not sure it's quite enough, but yeah, interested to hear everyone's picks. So who would like to go first, or before we even go first, do you want to give a quick roundup as to what's been going on in the investment markets?
I'll give you a quick intro to, yeah, markets have been actually really strong. They've continued their strength since we last met. And I think the big driver is what we call in the investment industry a Goldilocks setup, right? So we've got a very resilient economy in the US. Jobs growth is huge. And we just had a data release today, which was far in excess of expectations. The US GDP is growing at 3 to 4% annualized. The inflation trend is looking good. The trend is looking good. We can argue about the actual number, but the direction is in the right way. And as a result, company profits are solid, right? So, you know, company profits are holding up. And ultimately, remember, that's why we buy stocks. We are buying company profits, which are holding up really strong because the economy's doing well. And inflation, we might think of inflation as being negative, but actually helps company profits to deliver positive profits growth. So it's all good news so far. And the markets had a great year last year, off to a flying start again this year. But, you know, I just say, you know, markets don't always go up in a straight line. We've had a really strong run. I actually think a pause or a slight decline would be really healthy because it would help me to continue pound cost averaging at better levels here. I don't like buying when markets are really, really strong and showing strong momentum. So, yeah, but it all looks good so far.
And do you think there's any signs of bubbles?
I don't see strong signs of bubbles like we saw at the, you know, comparing it to the dot-com bubble back in 99-2000. The similarities aren't there. I mean, interest rates, if anything, are on their way down. Bubbles normally implode when interest rates are actually on the way up. So we're coming out of it from a, you know, we're coming through it from a positive perspective, macro-wise. And there's not much sign of excess. So people haven't been taking on, you know, excessive debt like they were before the global financial crisis. The only one thing is valuations are looking a little bit excessive in certain pockets, so like tech and the US market, which is why I don't think you should be fully invested in tech or the US. You need to be more globally diversified. And I know today we're all focused on value stocks, so we'll save that for a bit later. So, yeah, I don't see a huge amount of evidence of a bubble at this stage.
Adam, how about you?
Yeah, I think, as quite often, really, I agree with quite a lot of what Manish has said. I've got a slightly different take just because I come from a different angle, really, in terms of my analysis. And that is that, and it's something that I think applies more broadly than the stock markets these days, is that what I'm surprised about is that no one ever seems to want to have this conversation in real terms when it comes to stocks. And I don't know why. Like Manish said, inflation will favour, you know, nominal profits growth just by definition, as long as prices can at least try and somewhat keep pace with other costs that have been increasing, like wages and costs of input and all the rest of it. So the idea that we should be surprised, we're at a phase now, you know, we're sort of four plus years post the first lockdown, right? So we've seen quite a lot of stuff. We've seen big stimulus, we've seen big debts created. The US is carrying a lot of debt, still having to print money to cope with some of that. The UK is a bit different. The money supply started to trim back, the quantitative tightening and all the rest of it. But really, at a really simple level, most stuff's up about 25% from where it was in the end of 2019. Yeah, most stuff. There's plus or minus 5% here or there. And then there's some stuff that outlies a bit. Insurance is a bit of a nightmare, isn't it? It's up about 75%. You know, there are some anomalies in there. But largely speaking, if the market's therefore up 25% from where it was, who's really surprised? And is that really anything that should be leading to a bubble? Because I do agree with Manish's Goldilocks setup, and I think that's why we're all sort of driving in the same direction today on our picks and stuff. But I think, you know what? I'm not. Should we not look at the FTSE or the S&P or whatever in real terms? Why would we not look at it in real terms? I mean, you've done some interesting stuff over the years, Rod, that I've seen in terms of the price of houses based in gold or based in dollars or based in a number of, and for me, it's just one of those sort of setups, really. Why are we having this conversation in nominal terms? Because we do.
I guess, you know? I guess kind of what you might say is, well, most of these companies are leveraged, and that leverage kind of, that debt figure remains as a stable. And then engineer those factors in terms of cash it throws off. I'm not disagreeing with anything you're saying. I'm just kind of coming
I think you've added a good new dimension to that, though, because my other point really would be, much as I want to slap myself around the face every time I catch myself saying this time it's different, what is somewhat different is at the beginning of 2022, so much large corporate listed debt was fixed for such long duration, because anybody could see, they're obviously all reading the supplement at the time, and they could see that the interest rates were going to go upwards. They didn't know how much they were going to go upwards, but they didn't take too many chances. So, you know, the average duration of the debt that was fixed in the first quarter of 2022 was 17 years by listed companies. So you've got this situation where, yeah, sure, rates are up, but actually that's paying positive returns on money companies have got in the bank, but it's not affecting their debt burdens because they've got so much fixed at lower rates. Now, of course, that changes day by day, week by week, and it's dropping off, and there is a fiscal drag kind of effect of that coming away. But actually, this time it is different as it comes to the hiking cycle, because there were so many telegraphs of this coming that those interest rates haven't really been a big part of the problem. Where have they been a problem in property, for example, for people who are on variable rates, trackers that they'd survived on since 2007? Those guys and girls are taking it the hardest, you know, and they're the people who've been disposing at a more aggressive rate in the property side of things. So I just think it's one of those where the interest rate hasn't had a particularly detrimental effect. And as Manish correctly said, now all the expectations are back downwards, which is the reasonable impact, which sends a signal to say, well, actually, stocks can go higher from here, and stocks will outperform bonds, and value will outperform growth. But I won't spoil the rest of the package, you know.
Just to add to what Adam said, actually, you know, yes, a lot of these companies are fixed debt for the long term, and there's a big pocket of companies, especially in the US, which are actually cash rich. They don't have any debt. So like the Magnificent Seven, a lot of these tech stocks have really solid balance sheets, not much debt at all, if anything, net cash, right? So, you know, the interest rate hikes just don't affect them at all. They just kind of dance to their own beat.
Well, they do affect them.
Provide a bit of revenue.
Yeah. 5% on all their cash, and their debt's fixed at 3%. Like, there's a net positive, really, isn't it? Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, so do we have a volunteer? Who wants to go first?
I think Manish should go first, because I know he's got a couple of things. So maybe he can go first and last, and we can go in the middle, maybe.
Okay, sure. I think the sort of common theme here really is value plays. And, you know, we've seen a huge outperformance by tech stocks, particularly in the US. And you know, really, we at this stage of the cycle, it's natural to expect a rotation. I mean, I've been expecting a rotation into value plays for a while. It just hasn't happened to any great degree. And what the professional managers tend to do is, you know, they would look for that rotation. So we know tech stocks are highly priced. You know, what's next? Where is the value in the market? And value's been somewhat of an underperformer of late. It's been sort of coming back. But over the last 5-10 years, value as a theme has been a huge underperformer. And so by value stocks, I'm talking about banks, energy stocks, old economy stocks, so kind of machinery and things that, you know, makes stuff. These tend to be more economically sensitive. They have lower valuations. So I think it's good to have some value plays alongside your growth plays in your portfolio. So there's one I've been looking at. I have been playing it, full disclosure. I've been involved in this one more from an options perspective. And so this is the US Russell 2000 Index ETF called IWM is the ticker. And these are 2000 small cap US stocks. They show better value. So the PE ratio is 13, 14 times compared to a market ratio of 21, 22 times. Year to date, it is only up 1 or 2%, something like that. It's more diversified. So it's got, yes, it's got some tech, but it's got financials, it's got industrials. And it's an overall value play. And through the options, you get something like 1.5% per month. If you do it through options, and if you just do it as a regular stock, you know, I think the rotation play will help IWM if there is a bit of a rotation from tech into non-tech stocks.
So in the last year, it's gone up almost 18%, which is pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
And compared to, like, I don't know, the all share or the S&P, it's not quite as high, but it's pretty bloody good for a year, isn't it?
Yeah. And most of that, you can see it's kind of come, you know, starting from the end of 2023. Mm-hmm. So it is playing catch up versus the S&P 500 index.
Mm. Interesting. Okay.
It's done nothing over 5 years, as you can see.
No. And going back to Adam's point, in real terms, it's done less than nothing. Mm. So yeah, interesting on that point. So is this is the Russell 2000, isn't it? It's those companies, so American companies predominantly operating within America mostly. Are there many kind of global companies there?
There will be some global companies because there's some industrials, there's some technology companies in there as well, which will export, but not to the extent as the S&P 500 index. So a lot of these will be domestically oriented. A lot of financials in this as well. So if we've got an economy which is kind of gathering pace, that would tend to favour more the small cap stocks in any country, in not just the US, but in any country. So it's less export driven than the US S&P 500 index.
And also, I guess, where we've had huge growth from the likes of the Magnificent Seven and those stocks that have really kind of had all the growth for the last 2 years and everything else has really not kind of performed. Are you kind of saying there's that rotation from those into these as they've done well? And also there's, I guess there's a bit of an argument really about AI and AI coming in. People kind of think that, right, that means that your AI companies are going to be doing well. But if you look at all these value companies, they're the ones that have been making very small margins on the whole, like these low stocks. So if you've got a margin, I don't know, your profit margin is 1%, okay? So low, low margins. Now, and you've got a high cost base, like your operational costs are really high. If you can utilize AI to cut costs just by a small amount, you can double or triple your profit. So that's your earnings. So there's a big argument about AI, the biggest winners from AI being these kind of stocks that are low margin, but delivering a lot of these old school commodity type things. So you've got banks, you've got miners, you've got all these kind of operational companies, perhaps, that can do that. What are your thoughts on that? And I can't take credit for
great,
that.
Great
that's a point that I heard from somewhere else.
No,
frustratingly, I can't remember where from. Otherwise, I'd cite it. But yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. Actually, Goldman Sachs did a really sort of high profile study about a year ago, the impact of AI on the rest of the economy. Mm-hmm. And yes, we talk about Nvidia and all of these companies, like you say, but it's going to impact the whole economy. And if you've got low margins, as you say, you know, all of these companies have higher operational leverage, mm-hmm. which means they've got high fixed costs. But if those fixed costs can be reduced by a little bit through AI or other means, then their margins will explode up and their profits will explode up. So it's a really, really good point. And they will be beneficiaries, right? So they don't have to, yes, look, it's going to involve some labor cuts, I guess, to get more productivity into their companies. But yeah, I mean, look, it's a great point. It will absolutely impact their bottom line. And the other thing related to that is a lot of these companies, unlike the Magnificent Seven, a lot of these companies do have debt on their balance sheets. And if we're going into a cycle when rates are being cut, that's another way they're going to be leveraged and increase their profits. So there's two benefits, I would say. Yeah.
Great.
I think that's really interesting. You know, I think from a perspective of where the AI benefits are going to be, because you've got the obvious sort of benefits of the hardware manufacturers that we've seen taking place. And there's been a lot of chat about whether, you know, there's in where there is a parallel, I think, with .com is that you can say you're using AI in a startup and it can be a bit of a, but I mean, I think prop tech or tech in general has been like that for a while, to be honest. It's just AI adds that sort of new dimension to it all. But just sort of drawing that together with what you were saying about the performance of everything that's been picked over time, Rod, something that fits that profile very much is supermarkets, isn't it? You know, very, very low margin. And imagine, there does seem to be, when you think about it, a ton of stuff that AI could do in the grocery space in terms of supermarkets have always worked in that way. They pipe the smell of the freshly baked bread to the entrance to make you more hungry when you walk in and all the rest of it. But AI could do 100,000 more things to make you buy more, to make it easier to shop, to make it easier to shop online. And all of those could cut some of those costs. If they could solve the last mile fulfillment problem, it could be really interesting to see what happens to supermarket stock. But I'm not sure we're there yet, but really interesting.
Great. I'm not sure I've got anything more to kind of add to it. I guess from a negative point, my only concern is how much it's gone up over the past year. But again, over the 5 years, it's not huge. Mm. I would kind of, like you were saying, in a strong market, it's harder to invest. I'd like to see kind of almost no growth over the last year. And that would mean, yeah, I'd jump in on that. It's not all about whether it's gone, because obviously we know things can go up. And like we said, inflation-wise as well. It's interesting.
It's gone up from a low base last year. And this year, it's only done 1% or 2% year to date. But I think the other risk I would say with this is people have been calling for this rotation for a while, right? So it's not just, you know, what I'm saying isn't revolutionary, right? People have been calling for this for like the last 1, 2, 3 years, and it just hasn't materialized because the tech stocks in the US have been so strong. But at some stage it will. So, you know, this is a longer term play, I would say.
Now, in terms of that, there's a few arguments at the moment to say on the whole kind of value play and rotation into value and that kind of thing, which people have been, like you say, talking about for a few years and still haven't really come around. Is there this argument of the indexes taking all this money and people investing into those indexes, and then by proxy that then makes the bigger companies even bigger because the more money's going into there? So it's almost like a never-ending sort of cycle, and that takes everything from value, so it makes it proportionally so much harder for those smaller companies to then grow. Do you think there's sort of a truth in that?
I think that's been a big factor, which has enabled growth to continue outperforming value. Like you say, you know, there's been a huge move to ETFs, index fund investing. And those things invest in things which are market cap weighted indices. So like the S&P 500 is a market cap weighted index, which favors the bigger stocks and kind of at the expense of the smaller stocks. So there's absolutely kind of, you know, there's that, that's a valid point. You know, at some stage, there are still lots of active managers out there, right? So, you know, it's still, the market is kind of roughly split 50-50 now. So index investing has come from nowhere to be sort of 50% of the market. But remember, the other 50% of the market is active investing, which gives opportunities for those people to look at the value and to seek it out. So I think, yeah, it's a good point, but there is the opportunity for value to play out, I think, at some stage. We can never be sure about the timing. That's the problem with value. We know there's value there. It's cheaper multiples, higher dividend yields, but really you need a catalyst for that to come through.
So what do you think, what needs to change in the market for value to outperform growth?
I think we need more confidence that the economy is going to stay resilient. I think interest rates need to start coming down, which they will do later this year. Value stocks and smaller stocks tend to outperform when the confidence is really entrenched, right? So there is a risk on attitude, which is beginning to take place now. You know, so you just need additional confidence for that to happen. And then people will start saying, okay, well, look, these Magnificent Seven stocks or tech stocks are too expensive. We have a bit more confidence in the market overall, more confidence in the economy. Let's go and seek out what's cheap now. And so the banks are a good example. They've started to do really well. We're seeing early signs of value starting to deliver now.
Like you said, Barclays is up, I don't know, 38% since we picked it. So they are doing well. I'm just interested as to like when that catalyst and what we need to see changing happen, because we've been talking about this for a few years and it hasn't. And like you say, look, I just think when it comes to active managers, like we're having a little go at it ourselves here as a bit of fun, aren't we? But kind of what I discussed earlier just shows timing is absolutely vital when you're active, because you can get these stocks that drop by 60-70% and it outdoes your 200% stock gain. So you do need to kind of understand, right, when things are going well, let's take a bit off. And you do need to be bloody active. I mean, the clue's in the name. I think it's interesting. And then obviously, if you're investing into an active fund, there's the fees and all that. Mm-hmm. So the net gains that they need to be making, or the gains after you've paid fees, because they deserve fees because it's a lot of hard work, then is it worth it? And that's the problem. It's hard to find these managers.
It's very hard. Yeah. And actually, you know, I'm not sure if they do deserve the fees. If you look at the track record, the long-term track record, 90% of active managers underperform the index. So anyone could go to, there's a website called Spiva Global, S-P-I-V-A Global, and it will give you at-a-glance numbers. You know, it's 80 to 90% of active fund managers underperform, because it's hard. The timing is impossible, right? And that's why there's been a whole movement to ETFs and index tracking funds.
Sorry to interrupt this fantastic episode, but I just wanted to share some really exciting news with you. After a long time of wanting to be involved in a financial services business, I'm very pleased to say that myself and regular guest on the Rodcast, Adam Lawrence, have bought into 978 Finance. We are a directly authorised FCA-regulated mortgage broker who specialises in buy-to-let mortgages, commercial mortgages, and bridging and development loans. I've been very passionate about finance for a long time and have been part of financing a lot of very complex deals, as well as your typical buy-to-let and commercial mortgages. 978 Finance focuses on the customer journey and embodies the pragmatic solution-orientated finance for each case that I absolutely love. It's got some very, very difficult financing deals over the line for me, and now I'm really pleased to be part of the business. So if you do have any new mortgages, refinances, bridging or development needs, please do get in touch with us. You can either contact myself or you can email simon@978finance.com and we will make sure you're looked after. Let's get back to the show.
This podcast is sponsored by Connexion, your next level solution to scaling lettings businesses. Forget juggling apps or missing messages. Connexion's hub brings WhatsApp, SMS, emails, and calls together in one place, making sure you're always on top of compliance and tenant issues. With Connexion, say hello to AI-powered call summarization. No more frantic note-taking during calls, just clear, concise summaries of every conversation, ensuring you never miss a detail or commitment. For those in the lettings game looking to grow, Connections isn't just a tool, it's your partner in proactive portfolio management. Ready to revolutionize how you manage your properties? See what Connection can do for you.
My issue is I don't see that movement changing. I don't see people stopping or slowing down investing into those. And that's why I'm not as confident as it happened. But yeah. Okay. Adam, do you want to go next or shall I?
You go next, go on.
Okay. So my one is a FTSE 250 ETF. It's the Vanguard FTSE 250 UCITS. And I've got to admit, I was discussing this with Manish before the call, and I said I was going for a FTSE 250, and he said he was actually looking at this one, so I have kind of nicked it off him a bit. So sorry for that. But interestingly, we were both going down the same view. Now, reason I like this, I think the UK stock market in general is just so, the feelings towards it are so negative right now. Everything I see is how badly it's performed, and it has performed badly. Over the last year, it's up 6%. So again, in real terms, that's crap. Looking at comparing that to Manish's, which was 17%, comparing it to kind of the all share, it's bad. Comparing it to S&P, it's pretty terrible. But if you look at it over 5 years, it's down 2%. And that's nominally. So in real terms, it's absolutely plummeted. So I think everyone is looking at past performance of this and thinking, oh my God, how bad has it been? And just thinking that's going to be what's happened. Now, if you look at why it's performed so badly, well, we had the whole Brexit thing. We had COVID, which admittedly, that happened to every market, really. But since then, we've had issues politically. We've had investment fleeing away from the UK. And I just think certain things now have got to a stage where the government needs, like, it's not a case of whether they want to. I think they need to act, whichever government is in power, in a way that attracts investment into UK stocks. So we saw Jeremy Hunt talking about the extra kind of tax relief on investment into UK stocks through ISAs, although it's very small. Just things like that. I thought, okay, well, now they're starting to think that let's push this in. I mean, if you look at UK pension funds, I can't remember what the stat is, but it's something ridiculous, like 98% of funds are outside the UK. So why are UK pension funds not investing in the UK stock market? So I think this is kind of a bit of a bet, really, that political landscape and governance of the UK stock market and UK money in general is going to have much more of a, it's going to actively try to attract money or to keep money in the UK. And I think that's going to push things up. And then also the other side of things is we have had a crappy time economically in the UK, and UK companies have had a crappy time, really. Especially with the pound against the dollar, things like that as well, over the last 5 years. And so when you look at where we're coming from a pretty low base. And I just think there's a lot of opportunity for growth there. I think some of the companies we've got, Manish talked about like banks, a lot of these kind of industrial providers. That's exactly what the FTSE 250 is made up of. A lot of kind of energy providers as well. I think it's quite positive for those, like the whole kind of landscape. And so that's why I'm quite keen on it, really. Thoughts?
Well, I'll have 50,000 units, Rod. You've sold me, that's for sure.
I do.
I'll have 50,000 units. You've sold me on it, that's for sure.
So, what are your thoughts?
No, I like it. I think what you've said there makes an awful lot of sense. And I think buying things that are unfashionable or out of the UK's been out of favour for the thick end of 10 years, you know. Is everything as bad as everybody thinks? No, I think it's difficult to. What's getting conflated a lot at the moment is the economic outlook all horrific and doom and gloom and everything? No, not really, especially with what inflation has done to the. So that you can get miserable about the debt mountain, but if you apply my 25% inflation logic, you soon start to smile a bit more about where that is. The economy in and of itself is not doing too badly from what we know of Q1. And nor should it necessarily do too badly. I think it's been quite robust in the face of a difficult time, to be honest with you. So on that side of things, I'm not worried. Where people are talking about the UK having a tough time is in the fact that all of these cuts that are baked in by Jeremy Hunt's most recent two fiscal statements that are baked in for almost like a poison pill for the next parliament. Now, that's really tough because Labour are in the same position they were in 97, where they've got to kind of prove to everyone they're not just going to come in and spend all the money. So this is where Rachel Reeves and her private sector investment stuff is going. So I like Jeremy Hunt's idea of the, you know, the extra allowance for investing in UK companies and all the rest of it, whatever it takes. I like investing in unfashionable stuff, like I said. I like value, definitely. I like banks. I think banks are cheap and I agree with you on the energy company setup as well for net zero reasons. And, you know, anything that's going to get major league government subsidy for the next 25 years is well worth being invested in. So I love it, to be honest with you. I can't even critique it, which is really bad, really bad.
Manish, I know you're probably positive on it, having our conversation before you picked it.
Yeah, I can't really critique it only because, you know, it's hard for me to play devil's advocate. I was just adding to this one because I own this already and I was adding to this yesterday. So, you know, I like it long term. It's not been great as a performer historically because of the reasons you mentioned, Rod, right? The UK economy, but also a lot of these are rate sensitive. The story is very similar to the one I mentioned earlier, the US small caps, right? Because they're value driven, they're rate sensitive, they've been neglected. So I think, you know, as a longer term play with value, with UK potential, if they're going to be doing something like Adam and Rod, both of you have mentioned the need to kind of support the UK stock market. If that comes through, if they can do something about that, these will be a huge beneficiary because people will have no choice. They'll have to, the professional big pension funds, they will have to invest in something like this. And so far, look, the UK is, because all of these pension funds have a global mandate, right? So they have to match the global index. And the UK is only 4 or 5% of the global index. So it's almost like a rounding error. They don't even need to invest in the UK, which is why, you know, as you say, 99% of their exposure is outside of the UK. But look, it would only take a small change for them to have to invest into something like this. So that's why I'm holding this for the long term.
What would make you sell it?
I think these are very, very economically sensitive. And that's why if you look at the chart, they had a huge decline from 2022 as interest rates were going up. And because they're economically sensitive, because they're rate sensitive, if we had a similar story again, if we had another recession, if we had interest rates starting to go up instead of going down, these stocks would be, you know, big underperformers. So that's what would cause me to sell it. Right now, I don't see that. I don't, you know, if anything, interest rates are going to come down. The economy, it's been pretty underwhelming. And, you know, if the momentum keeps going from here, I don't see a huge amount of downside on the economy. So yeah, those would be the catalysts for me to sell it.
Would you expect this to outperform the general market?
So the general market being the FTSE 100. So the FTSE 100 is really, what is it? Energy stocks, commodities, financials. So, and a lot of global companies, globally exposed companies. So yeah, again, similar story. If the confidence deepens in the economy and stock markets, then this will outperform because it's what's called a higher beta play. So this has a higher beta compared to the FTSE.
The other point, and I'm not sure if this is really relevant, but with this, you've also got a lot of global companies coming into FTSE 250 companies to try and buy them up and privatize them. Like we've seen it with kind of some of the chocolate makers and things like that coming in. I don't know if that would really move the needle or what your thoughts are on that, but we've seen an awful lot of that over the last couple of years. Any thoughts on that?
I think it's a confidence thing, right? So we're talking about M&A activity, mergers and acquisitions by foreign companies, private equity buyouts, that sort of thing. Yeah. So as they get more confident, because remember, private equity sort of buyouts, leveraged buyouts, that sort of thing, for that to work, you need lower interest rates. And so far, that's not been great. But as rates start coming down, that makes it much more attractive to go out and buy companies using debt. So maybe not there yet, but maybe early signs of that happening as interest rates start coming down. Assuming interest rates come down meaningfully, which is a big if.
Well, exactly.
I mean, the pro-Brexit side often talks about the Brexit dividend, didn't they? Which in the States was more seen as the Brexit discount. And this still looks to offer a bit of Brexit discount. And with a relatively strong, with a $1.25 to the pound, it might well look like good value for the money coming from stateside for sure. I think, you know, you have the trust tax and you've still got the Brexit discount, you know. So I think all roads lead to Rome here, my friend.
Okay, great. All right. Adam? What's your
I think that's a winner. It's just when it's a winner that's the problem, isn't it? That's where we just have to keep recording until we've got it right, Rod. It's as simple as that.
I think my only concern is, will it then outperform, say, I don't know, your S&P 500 over the next year or two?
Sure. I don't understand enough about the exact sort of currency risk differentials to make a really informed statement on that. But so me this quarter. We're all in the value camp. I've chosen a Dimensional Fund Advisors value fund. So I've been a big fan of these guys for knocking on 20 years now, ever since I first started to learn a bit more about investment and worked in wealth management. And to give people a bit of a flavor of who Dimensional are, they've had various Nobel laureates involved in their inception and their strategy. So they did some clever stuff pretty early on. So for example, if you imagine when a stock falls out of an index, it gets sold off quite hard by all the bots that mirror the indices. And as you were saying earlier on, the more passive tracker stuff there is, the more that effect kicks in. Similarly, if a stock goes into an index, then ultimately that stock is going to rise in value by the nature of it being in the index. So what these guys did years ago is worked out how to block trade so that they could allow people to sell off without going into the broader market. So they would be able to buy at a bit of a discount, or they would be able to sell less of a loss than they would have to as and when things came out or into the market. So basically sort of taking passive upper level in terms of the intelligence that they used. They've used the logic of the efficient market hypothesis, Farmer and French's three-factor model, all of this stuff, which, without boring everybody to tears, goes into why there is a premium for small companies and evidences what sort of quantum that premium has had over time. So ultimately, you're left with, you know, small cap value, which is where Manish has gone this quarter, makes loads of sense. This is looking at small companies. I've stuck to the UK because, for me, I think introducing the extra currency risks and all the rest of it when you don't necessarily need to, as I say, I find more difficult to quantify. Obviously, you could have this as income or you could have this as accumulation units, depending on what you want to do. But I'm expecting pretty significant performance from this sort of stock over the next couple of years.
I mean, it's already done really well in the last, year to date, really, last few months, hasn't it?
We should have recorded an episode earlier. That's all I can say. I mean, but if you go back to my inflation point there, we're probably in real terms roughly at where we were in April 23, yeah? And I think that the value underperformance, Manish touched on it earlier, the value underperformance, certainly since 2020, got quite severe. A lot of this stuff has caught up a bit. But again, going back to 150 years worth of data, there's tended to be a premium, not an equality. So I think we're getting in earlier on the wave rather than we've missed the boat already.
And what are the fees on this?
So they're super low. Again, they're very, very keen on keeping things at tracker sort of level. The difficulty is you have to find a way to get into the fund. It used to be institutions only. They didn't really deal with anything that looked like a small chunk of money. It was all for, you know, Nobel-winning professors going around and selling investments to pension funds. And as you know, the size of some of the US pension funds and things, they're very, very serious operators. Something that they could park a lot of money in. But they're very low. It's not an active. It looks more like a passive fund than an active fund when it comes to the fees.
And so in terms of the UK value, I mean, everyone's got a different kind of definition of value, I guess. What are the types of stocks we're talking about here? Is it similar to that FTSE 250 we were discussing?
So similar, but the technical point here will be in terms of stocks that are producing yield, right? In terms of, so disproportionately, if you rank the market into sort of growth, mid and value, it will be stocks that are producing disproportionate amounts of yield and throwing off cash cow style stocks. So there won't be any sort of sectoral categorization here. You know, it will just purely be done on numbers.
And why do you think those sort of companies are the ones that will benefit over the next year or two?
Well, this is a pretty classic sort of rotation play, as Manish sort of alluded to a little bit earlier on. So it should be the case that in an environment where rates are falling, that value should outperform growth. We've been waiting for this to actually outperform. So there's a pretty good point of where value did quite poorly there. And then there's a pretty quick recovery, isn't there? And then probably since then, like I say, inflation really. So I think we are, well, I don't think we are. I mean, I know from the data that we are a decade plus behind in terms of the overperformance we should have seen. So it's a bit of a mean reversionary play. So similar to what I said about yours, the trouble is I'm convinced it's right. It's just timing. It's just timing.
As you can see there, over the last 10 years, it's underperformed the UK.
Exactly.
Kind of all companies by quite a bit, really.
By a healthy margin, yeah, and that's it. And if you think that traditionally that should have overperformed, when you think about that now,
whereas when you go to the last sort of 6 months, I mean, that's where it started to just start beating it by a small kind of margin, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see what Manish thinks about that in terms of the mean revert. And it could be, of course, that we have to throw the last 10 years worth of data out because we had unholy low levels of debt. And that propped up a lot of things and it gave a lot of free bets in the PE early stage growth space. I don't know. But when you go back over time, that's the sort of stuff you're expecting there.
We can see there from sort of 2004 up to kind of 2007, it did outperform as well. And that's when it was kind of higher interest rates as well. So, and then since then, really, since that crash 2008, it's kind of lagged behind.
I think this looks like one of those where, you know, you can see the pattern, right? So when the markets are going up, it tends to outperform. And when markets sell off, when we have those kind of big corrections, it really sees a fairly outsized drop in some of these examples. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's, and particularly over the last few months, it has started to outperform. And the reason for that is because these guys are, you know, clearly value focused. So they go and seek out where the deepest value is. And that deep value only comes through when confidence comes back, kind of going back to what I was saying before. When there's confidence in the markets, that deep value stuff really sort of starts outperforming. So you kind of need a couple of things for this to keep outperforming. You need the markets to keep, you know, going up and having confidence. You need interest rates to, you know, drop off from here, which they will, or rather expectations of interest rates to drop off. And then you need the UK economy to start delivering as well. So you need those things. But right now, those ingredients seem to be in place, which is why it's outperforming of late.
Yeah, it's how long would you be invested in this? This is my kind of only issue with this is I think it is about timing. And taking on what you both said, I would be getting in here thinking, right, over the next 2 years, all markets are going to do fairly well, especially all value and the UK market. And that should indicate that this will do better. But as soon as there's any change in the market, this will do worse than them. So it's kind of like, do you just get in it and go, okay, let's look at this every kind of quarter, every 6 months and take our gains when they come, because it's not a long-term hold? Or do you think it is a long-term hold?
Well, I think it depends if you're going to rebalance accordingly, because if it is outperforming, you're going to end up trimming off a bit more of that and supplanting back into what has underperformed, or new picks if that's the way that you're doing it. So if you do follow that kind of anything like pound cost averaging, value averaging kind of strategy, that could potentially, and then you do some rebalancing once a quarter, that can effectively mathematically take care of yourself.
But I see it as a lot, but
the direct answer, I think it's a long-term hold.
Because that only works if you want it as a long-term hold, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Whereas if you were saying, well, actually, I think this is a rotation for a short term and then it's going to rotate backwards or rotate the other way, then you might go, right, I want to get out of it, which is kind of where I'm at, I think. I think it will do well over the next kind of couple of years, but I'm not that confident in it after that, because if the kind of environment changes a bit, which it inevitably will do, that's where I'm not hugely confident, if I'm honest.
Well, your colours are nailed to the mast, my friend, so let's see what happens.
Manish, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, look, for me, it's a long... I mean, I hold UK mid-caps, the 250, and similar kind of theme, right? So I hold it for the long term. So I would be holding this for the long term. Because value, like you say, you can't time value. It comes in and out of fashion, but over the long term, it delivers outperformance. Historically, that's always been the case. So if you take that assumption, yeah, look, I think it's good to have a counterbalance, because I have growth and value. I have the US and the UK. So I have kind of different buckets in my own portfolio. And I found back in 2022, the US market had a good year. It's having a good year this year. US market and growth having a good year this year, had a good year last year. But in 2022, that wasn't the case. But in 2022, whereas my US exposure wasn't doing so well, my UK exposure was quite resilient, right? And including my FTSE 250 stocks, which were quite resilient. So I take a portfolio view of all of these things. So I'm not really that fussed if this underperforms, because my other stuff will be outperforming.
Because it goes on, it hedges. It's negatively correlated, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, value and growth, you know, they kind of counterbalance each other, like happened in 2022. And the UK itself is in itself a value market.
Well, right? Is that the case, though? Are you saying when growth goes up, value does the opposite? Or are you saying it depends on the actual reasons that growth goes up?
Yeah. Not always.
No, I don't think they're negatively correlated, Rod, if you look to the data, they're not strongly correlated.
I don't think they are, but that's my point. Is if you think one will go up, that doesn't automatically mean the other will go down.
No, I mean, if we have a deep recession, everything goes down, right? Like in 08, like in COVID, during the COVID crisis, everything goes down. But during times like 2022, when interest rates were going up, the growthy stuff was coming down. And, you know, the UK stuff, value stuff wasn't coming down as much. It was more resilient. Mm-hmm. So it just it smooths out your portfolio a little bit at that time.
Okay, great. Sorry to interrupt this fantastic episode, but I just wanted to share some really exciting news with you. After a long time of wanting to be involved in a financial services business, I'm very pleased to say that myself and regular guest on the Rodcast, Adam Lawrence, have bought into 978 Finance. We are a directly authorised FCA-regulated mortgage broker who specialises in buy-to-let mortgages, commercial mortgages, and bridging and development loans. I've been very passionate about finance for a long time and have been part of financing a lot of very complex deals, as well as your typical buy-to-let and commercial mortgages. 978 Finance focuses on the customer journey and embodies the pragmatic, solution-orientated finance for each case that I absolutely love. It's got some very, very difficult financing deals over the line for me, and now I'm really pleased to be part of the business. So if you do have any new mortgages, refinances, bridging or development needs, please do get in touch with us. You can either contact myself or you can email simon@978finance.com and we will make sure you're looked after. Let's get back to the show.
This podcast is sponsored by Connexion, your next level solution to scaling lettings businesses. Forget juggling apps or missing messages. Connexion's hub brings WhatsApp, SMS, emails, and calls together in one place, making sure you're always on top of compliance and tenant issues. With Connexion, say hello to AI-powered call summarization. No more frantic note taking during calls, just clear, concise summaries of every conversation, ensuring you never miss a detail or commitment. For those in the lettings game looking to grow, Connections isn't just a tool, it's your partner in proactive portfolio management. Ready to revolutionize how you manage your properties? See what Connection can do for you.
Manish, you've got another one.
Yeah, just a very quick one. I mean, just to add to the value theme, BP. I mean, I was looking at BP very briefly, obviously the UK oil stock. And look, it's 7.5x price to earnings ratio. You get a decent dividend yield, close to 5%. Over the last 1 year, it's down by 5%. And, you know, another thing, if you are concerned about the geopolitics right now in the Middle East, you know, the one beneficiary has been the oil price, right, which has actually been outperforming. So if you want to add a bit of insurance to your portfolio and a bit of value and some yield and a blue chip UK name, I think BP kind of ticks all of those boxes. So I've kind of gone for BP as well.
Interesting. And just looking at that, over the last 5 years, it's gone down by over 11%, again, nominally. So in real terms, that's a big loss. But during that time, it's given off that dividend yield as well. So it does throw off a bit of cash too, which we've got to remember as well. So that there's those benefits there to reinvest, which I think people do forget with a lot of these English stocks. We've been talking about kind of share prices, but ignoring any earnings that come off them. So I think it's total returns and all that.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, I think this is good. I mean, in terms of oil and things like that, I can't see it not doing well in the next 5 years. I'm struggling to see how it would not do well based on kind of just infrastructure spending that needs to be done. And obviously energy and houses and all this kind of stuff. Over 20 years, yeah, maybe. But certainly over five, I think it's
interesting. I think it could have a good 2025 year future, to be honest, because even with exploration being difficult. I mean, look, there's a reason why Buffett has been buying Occidental, right? And I've not looked into that in any level of detail, but I'm presuming the insiders at Occidental have assured him they will be continuing to forge forward in a world that, regardless of all the net zero chat, uses more oil year on year all the time, has all sorts of question marks over what the Saudis have got left in the tank. Who knows what's going to happen with Russia, except every single piece of news is always bearish on oil supply when the world population is still growing and energy usage per head in developing countries is rocketing upwards while we spend our time scratching our backsides worrying about how much we recycle or whatever when it's just a pebble in a pond, I'm afraid. Sorry to sound so bearish on the climate change front, but that's the reality of the world if you look at the figures. So I think it's a great pick, and I think it's difficult to understand quite why it's had such a tough time in a time of, you know, fairly considerable upwards ticking in terms of oil, especially when you compare to the, you can't go, what's the max give you, Rod? I take it goes back to the 90s or the 80s, does it? Or something?
To the 90s.
So, I mean, the share price hasn't done a lot since, what, 99?
Gone sideways for 24 years, right?
Yeah. And like Rod says, the yield's been there, 4.5% yield or whatever, but still.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting. I wondered how that does compare to something like, well, Exxon, for example, if we were to look at that over the last...
I'll look at the max on Exxon. I mean, Exxon will have gone down, I think, because...
Well, it's gone up over the last year. And so, look, that's gone from, say, 1999 again. It's certainly done a lot, hasn't it? So what's causing that, I guess? Why is this not doing as well as the other?
I think BP's had its own kind of internal issues, hasn't it? So sort of restructuring and all sorts of things going on. In fact, the closest competitor, Shell, has, you know, it's underperformed Shell. So it could be a turnaround story as well to add to the mix. You know, for me, primarily it's a sort of insurance play given what's going on, but yeah, look, it's also a value play based on the restructuring that's going on here.
No, interesting. It absolutely kind of has certainly underperformed the likes of Shell.
Well, it's had deep water to think about, didn't it, as well, and things like that. So don't forget things like deep water, but exactly, a couple of bigger scandals. But those
are things that are kind of short-term issues, aren't they? Obviously, you pay a big fine for them and there's money to be spent, but do they affect its ability to earn future cash flows or future earnings? Not sure.
Yeah, those are sort of one-off events, but yeah, it's really a stock price is based on, you know, its future earnings potential. I think with BP, they've got a lot of non-performing assets and things that they're working on right now, disposing on, you know, a lot of different assets.
Mm. But it's got that 7.3 PE ratio versus 12 for Shell. Mm. Interesting, yeah. Okay. Interesting pick. Great. Yeah, I like it. Super. I think we've come to the end. Anything else to say?
Not too much to add after today. I think it's been a lot of really good stuff shared. And I think let's see how bullish, you know, there are a few alarm bells being rung at the moment by some people in the market that things have gone too far. And it's probably also wise to remind people when the wheels come off, you know, the short sellers have all been squeezed out of all existence. When the wheels come off, things go down 7 to 10 times faster than they go up. So it is a bit scary when you look at the last sort of, what, 3, 4, 5 months of the S&P managed. And it's just this nice sort of looks a bit like Madoff's returns over 25 years. And that's always a bit worrying, you know. But I think we probably between us are feeling that there's further to go and we're not overly bearish or seeing too many bubbly signs at the moment.
Mm. I think a lot of people have been talking about new highs and, you know, this how scary it is to be investing when the markets are at new highs. But I don't think we need to be afraid of new highs. You know, they make good headlines, but they're pretty normal, actually, over history. You know, if markets have gone up 8 to 12% on average every year, which they have, by definition, we need to keep making new highs. That's always been the case. In fact, I think it's something like 15 to 20% of the time markets have always been at new highs. So that I'm not afraid of that. What I am kind of potentially cautious about is the fact that markets have been so strong and, you know, we're due a pullback. And as I said before, I would welcome a pullback because I think it's healthy for the markets.
Okay, fantastic. Gents, thank you so much for coming on and giving up your time again. And we will get the next one in the diary for the next quarter. So looking forward to it already. We'll see how these ones have all performed.
Always very enjoyable, both. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much, guys. See you next time.